Our next presenter is Dr. Suet Lim, and her presentation is Evaluating Transforming Day Programs. Is there a difference in acute service utilization between community integrated care and traditional partial program users? Dr. Lim is from the University of Pennsylvania with specialties in demography and sociology. She's worked in local public health departments for 15 years. She started in maternal and child health, conducting assessments, chronic disease epidemiology, cancer cluster analysis, program evaluation, health statistics reporting, and public health research. And Dr. Lim is currently working on program evaluations, performance measurement, provider profile, and pay for performance.
This is, however, my first time presenting at the mental health session. So today I'm going to talk about a study that we did evaluating acute service utilization between two groups. One group of service users who were in the traditional partial program, and another group who moved with the program as they transform into community integrated centers. As per the requirement, I have no financial relationships to disclose. I didn't want to cram everybody, all the co-authors, on the first slide, so I want to acknowledge the various individuals listed up there. I am with the Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disability Services. I am in the community behavioral health part, which oversees the Medicaid population for the behavioral health needs for the Medicaid population in the city of Philadelphia. And we have co-authors from the University of Pennsylvania, whom I should acknowledge that Liz Snow had done the heavy data crunching part for this analysis. Okay, let me start with a little bit of background. The Department of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disabilities Services, as I mentioned, serves the uninsured and underinsured population of Philadelphia for their behavioral health needs. And beginning in 2006, the department started transforming its system of care to a recovery-oriented system. Some of you may recall in 2003, the President's New Freedom on Commission on Mental Health report came out that spoke about recovery models for mental health care. Okay, so for system transformation in Philadelphia, the goals, three main goals were articulated. Transformation goals focus on recovery, resilience, and self-determination. And amongst the first service groups to transform, so the Department of Behavioral Health provided mental health services, as well as services for the DNA population. But the first group of service group to transform was the partial hospitalization, social rehab, and the vocational programs, also collectively known as the day services. The transformation goal for day services was articulated to replace day with a range of recovery-focused rehab and treatment services to decrease dependence on site-based services. And this part is important, okay, because the day services previously essentially had services on site. You came to the program and you stayed within the program walls, okay? The transformation promoted community integration. What was meant by that was you went out into the community. So you're, you know, as part of the changes, services were then taken out into the community, and a lot of encouragement was made to get individuals to go out into the community. Okay. The other goals include to promote peer culture and peer support, and ultimately to decrease crisis and inpatient treatment utilization. Okay, timeline for data transformation. So June 2006, the department issued requests for pilot transformation plans. At the end of the year, they had selected a number of agencies to implement the plan. And in April 2007, the first wave of three agencies then implemented their transformation plans. Now, these transformation plans are fairly comprehensive. They included not only program description, what the programs are supposed to look like after transformation, but they included things like change management teams, how the agencies were going to manage after transformation. So the next phase was three more agencies implemented their plan in September, and then by the end of the year, three more agencies were scheduled to transform. Okay, so before the transformation, I put up here a profile of individuals who use partial hospitalization programs. This is unduplicated clients in 2006, you know, just basic demographic profile there. We'll see. And at that point, I want to point out that the annualized cost for partial was $28.5 million. And I'm jumping ahead, but partial was also one of our high cost services. So when the state looked at us for the Medicaid population, partial hospitalization was identified as one of the services that they actually requested us to do some root cause analysis on. Okay, so how is a community integrated recovery center different from a partial? I've listed up there the required components of a transform program. I cannot stress enough the part about community integrated services. And there was emphasis on partnerships. Partnerships with other services, not necessarily behavioral or physical health, but other services, you know, outreach services in the community. The idea was we would blend treatment and rehab services and I mentioned peer culture as one of the transformation goals. So you have persons in recovery who would then be hired on, the official title I believe is certified peer specialist, as staff in these agencies. Okay, so that's the model. So there's staffing changes as well as program changes. And the role of staff extended greatly. And I can list some examples in a bit. And we're supposed to, those transforming programs were supposed to have a holistic approach. So the expectation is that the program will meet other behavioral health needs. In other words, outpatient referrals to other services were to be the exception. Okay. So once a program transformed, the recovery consultants that we had used to, push transformation along. The idea is that recovery can only be achieved by coordinated rehab and treatment services, and somehow the integration of rehab and treatment is going to address crisis, thus reducing inpatient and emergency use. I want to say a little bit about the role of staff and what the expansion, what shape the expansion took. Essentially, it was whatever it takes. I've listed up here, under those two different areas, what the staff is supposed to do. But what I've not listed is also things such as, and we heard this through other data that we collected, namely qualitative data, and also the quarterly meetings, where staff acted as guides to individuals seeking services, other services outside of the program site. So staff were expected to, for example, accompany, well, expect accepted is a strong word. I mean, it's not written into the program description, but staff did do things like accompany individuals to go get their driver's license, to go fill out applications for a library card. There were also, with the emphasis on community integration, there were also things like, you know, staff accompanying groups of individuals in the program to outings, to shopping expeditions, to a ball game. Okay. So the pilot was to affect 9 agencies. So by the end of 2007, 9 agencies were on this transformation track, and these 9 agencies serve approximately 2,000 individuals on an annual basis. And everyone said that length of stay, although it's a little difficult, we had some discussion about what really constitute length of stay, that length of stay of individuals in those programs were extensive, and what they want the transform programs to do was to somehow reduce length of stay, and that we would see, people with, more recovery capital. Okay. All right. So for evaluating these transforming programs in the evaluation design, we had a number of, outcomes that we wanted to look at using the community participation scale. We looked at increased community integration using the recovery assessment scale, quality of life scale, then looked at participant satisfaction with the program. Now, these 3 scales are all individual level data that was collected from individuals in the program at 6-month cycles, starting before the programs transformed. So data was collected way early, in like February of 2007, and then every 6 months after that. And finally, clinical stability. What we wanted to look at was decreased inpatient and emergency service utilization. And one of the initial analysis, so this is something that I had done. This was, the chart is not well labeled. This is looking at individuals in those transforming programs. CIRC stands for Community Integrated Recovery Centers. The program participants in, 2009. So the analysis was individuals who have been in the program, in the transforming program, for at least 1 year. And we then look back to see what their inpatient and CRC use was and compare it to the first year that they were in the transforming program. This is what, prompted the current study to focus on clinical stability, as I mentioned, changes in crisis-related service use, and also secondary focus on cost, specifically changes in inpatient and outpatient costs. So the study population is the Medicaid beneficiaries in the city of Philadelphia receiving day. And we have then 2 groups. The intervention group are the folks in the recovery-oriented community integrated initiative. So these are folks from the transforming programs. The comparison groups then is made up of individuals from traditional partial program. Okay. The study design is pre-test, post-test design with a contemporaneous comparison group. What we originally wanted to do was a match control study. But when we looked at, and I'm going to skip ahead a little bit, when we looked at the traditional programs, the traditional partial programs that did not transform during that time period, out of 4 of the agency, the 4 largest agencies, we couldn't find, a large enough group to draw controls from. So we ended up with an N of 583 from the comparison group. And let me go back a little bit so you can see the sample for the intervention group was drawn from 6 out of the 9 agencies. One of the 9 agencies serves an MR population, and so we wanted to exclude that group because, that would have been another factor to include. Two out of the three agencies that were scheduled to transform in December 2007 did not make the deadline. So, you know, for purpose of, you know, a clean sample, we then excluded individuals from those two agencies as well. And we ended up with a sample of 437 adults, 18 to 64 from the intervention group. The criteria for both groups is that individuals have to have been participating in the partial for at least 1 year before the start date. And they have to have been remain with the program for at least 1 year after the start date of the transformation. Okay. All right, so I'm going to skip ahead to, oops, I'm sorry, I am going backwards here. Okay. I just put up the definitions of different variables. I want to get to this table, table one, the baseline table. So the two groups, even though we did not have a match control group, as you can see, and I don't have a pointer, do I? Okay. I hope everyone can read that. As you can see, there's no difference between the intervention group and the control group in you know, the demographic factors, gender, race, age, or in the MA program category. Okay. I can use this. In the primary diagnosis, sorry. We did find a difference, and this, as well as the co-occurring status. We had two ways of defining co-occurring. One was, we defined it as at least having one MH and one substance abuse service use. It's two periods. One is in the baseline, in the pre-year, pre-transformation year, and then we also categorize co-occurring status if the individual had same MHSA use any time during the study period, so up through year two. Okay, so here's what the pre-year services looks like. This is, let's see, percent inpatient admission for the intervention group, control group, and as you can see, there is no difference. So, okay, we look at our data a couple ways. Started with the bivariate analysis, and then looked at repeated measures analysis using logistic regression. Okay. Actually, I'm sort of giving away the story here, but essentially, we found no findings or no difference in inpatient and CRC's crisis response center use over the 3 years of study. So, okay, not surprising. Then when we look at the multivariate analysis, co-occurring disorder at baseline is the strongest predictor of probability of an inpatient episode and emergency episode. No surprise there. When we control for co-occurring, so in subsequent models, put in co-occurring and the variable for the intervention group, and we find that the co-occurring disorder remains statistically significant predictor, and we saw less, you know, small effect of the CERC program. Okay. The cost analysis at this point is preliminary. We found significant decreases in outpatient costs for the intervention group. My interpretation is that there's fidelity to that holistic model that I spoke about a little earlier, that the idea is that individuals coming to CERCS would get, you know, should get most of their behavioral health needs met there. So they would not be going to, you know, another place for other outpatient therapy services or targeted case management. Okay, we did start some preliminary analysis looking at the subset of individuals with co-occurring diagnosis, and at this point, what we found was total cost decrease from pre-year to post-year two is greater for the CERC group, and there's a lot of interest in the co-occurring group. Okay, briefly, we had, you know, for the intervention group, higher percent of diagnosis with substance abuse co-occurring disorder, okay, and that we took as a good sign, fidelity to the holistic care model. And there was some back and forth. The no increase, some, you know, individuals have said that's a good sign. The recover adherence said, well, of course we were expecting. But I would say one of the things I guess I would like to emphasize is that increased community integration, you know, which we did see using other measures, you know, anticipated to have more stress on the individuals did not translate into higher acuity. So, but the thing is, when we look at the program descriptions, they were so varied that it's really hard to say. You know, the program design were just different, the rollout of changes. It's not just the timing of like first wave, you know, agencies did X by, you know, 6 months, and second wave agencies did X by 6 months. It was literally all over the place. So
we'll have to stop.
Okay. So we can stop there. And questions, I guess?
Sure. I think now it's the open questions.
Who do we want to start?
And left? Please repeat the question.
Will do.
I'm just wondering if one of the variables in TRAP was whether what type of housing they had, whether they were housed or whether they were precariously housed.
Okay, the question is whether we had any data on housing and I guess housing stability. No, not that was not one of the data we collected. We have claims data, so we could look at that, but then it would be for people who get, you know, residential services, so for the individuals with unstable housing, we really would have no information whatsoever. Yes. The names. The question is the names of the program that had the intervention. So, let's see. For the first wave, I'm not going to remember the order. You mean the CERCs, the transforming program?
Well, Horizon
Households one. Wedge is another. Path is another. COMAR, which I forget what the acronym stands for, is another. Community Council is, I guess, six. Is that six? And ELWIN, which serves primarily an MR population, but it's not included. I mean, that's, you know, that they are part of the CERCs, but they're not included in the analysis. Okay. Question, I guess. I'm sorry, you were...
Was there any partnering with the peer support organization, NAMI, in the course of getting this transformation?
Was there any partnering with NAMI for the peer support? I'm not clear on exactly how those that worked. The city arranged for training, and you know, NAMI had provided some support and had encouraged and I think required the CERCs to have peer support based services in the CERC. So they're involved, but I couldn't tell you exactly how.
One more question. In our community, at least what I've seen is not so much transformation of the day programs, but just withering of the day programs, which seem to vanish. Is there some commitment now to this process?
Okay, so the question is there a commitment now that we've seen this process? I can tell you that the number of individuals using, we'll call it day services, actually has been going down in Philadelphia. I don't know, you know, why that is, because the expectation was that we would have more people actually using day services, particularly after all agencies have transformed. I should mention that the four traditional partial agencies that we drew the comparison group from has started their transformation as of last year. So there remains a few small specialty programs that have not transformed, but essentially the bulk of, you know, partial programs have transformed. Was there more questions?
Let me just, we only have two or three minutes. Are there any questions for any of the previous presenters? Before,
please. When you said industry, is some of that funding coming from pharmaceutical manufacturers or not?
No, not in our partnership.
Let me.
Not this study. This is strictly National Science Foundation funding and the FQHC jointly providing for that.
Any other questions? Yes, sir. And for Dr. Bolin? Who's that for?
The last presenter.
Dr. Lim.
You mentioned, and I apologize if I missed this, the programs, they were all over the map in terms of how they were doing this. Were they given some type of implementation guidelines that they were supposed to then develop a plan around?
The question is whether the transformation sites were given any specific guidelines for how they should transform.
And if so, was there a measure of fidelity?
Guidelines were generic. I mean, what you saw up there, the four bullets point that I had up there about what the goals are and use of support services and emphasis on community integration was pretty much it. It was really a big experiment. We had a few, two to three recovery, consultants who provided TA to the agencies as they transformed, provided TA to them as they wrote their implementation plan and helped them figure out, program design and so on. But there were no, I would say it's more of a generic framework rather than specific guidelines, although the consultants probably say, but those four pillars would suffice as guidelines, but they were pretty big.
I think that'll be the last question. Go ahead.
Yeah. I have a question about the cycle of services in Philadelphia, how people get stuck in the system for their whole life and they don't really get any better. That was my experience. I was a therapist.
Question, about population in Philadelphia about going into service and not get any better. I don't know what to say about all different services. For day, one of the things we will look at is the length of stay, and I mentioned that that's a little tricky because there is no consensus what constitutes treatment an episode, and we've had discussions with the providers to try to come up with what everyone would agree is a good gap in days to determine, to define an episode. So,
if presenters are available for other questions, as people have them.
Thank you very much.